you buy life insurance first because you love somebody, but then you convert it to the right policy because you love yourself.
The Worth Report, featuring Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Less than 1% of all term policies actually pay a death benefit to the beneficiary.
We'll take a look at the past, present, and future of the financial landscape and discuss how it affects you, your family, the world around you, and most importantly, your retirement.
And I'm not saying you spend all your money on life insurance. It goes in the course of a plan, but that is a part of the plan.
This is The Worth Report. Now, here are your hosts, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday. Welcome to The Worth Report. If it's Saturday morning, it's The Worth Report. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, here with Glenn Wright, founder and president of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial planning and offer commentary on local, national, and global events that affect your ability to sustain your financial future. And I'm here again with my friend, Glenn. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, man, doing wonderful. How about yourself, Nick?
I'm doing super, man. This is an interesting week. Obviously, this presidential campaign is continuing to heat up.
Indeed.
I heard more about presidential hopeful Trump's campaign to win over the African-American vote. Man, I just was listening to this thing, man. He's got all these surrogates out and talking about what he's going to do for the black community. And you know, the most exciting part is he's going to go to a black church. He's never been to one before.
Wow.
And he's going to go and talk to some black folk at a Detroit church. That will be interesting.
Well, that is going to be interesting. You know, I thought about that. But if you think back, Nick, how many other candidates have reached out in that way? I mean, there are many who have just said nothing at all.
That's absolutely true. And I think one of the things that you have to do when you reach out to any community is make sure you don't insult them.
No.
I think that's the first thing you want to do is I think you really want to come across as sort of authentic. And, you know, the other thing I think you might want to do is talk to them.
Oh.
I think that's the other part. It's hard to talk to a different community while talking about the community you're trying to persuade. That's interesting.
But he is going to Detroit, though, so.
That's right. Yeah, and you're a Detroit guy. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
I forgot. What am I saying?
I mean, you know, if you're going to go somewhere, then go to
Detroit.
Go to the second best city. Charlotte's number one.
There you go.
Because you and I are here.
That's right.
And then Detroit will be number two.
That's right. Now, I don't know the name of the church, but we need to find that out because it may be a church you're familiar with.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to know. We'll talk about that on the other side. So here we are again. We're going to continue this rich conversation about wealth and how to develop it and how to create wealth, rather. And also the more dire conditions of economic inequality, the sort of outcome of an amazing imbalance in wealth that we experence here in this country. Well, why don't we start off by a really interesting kind of note that sort of puts this in a perspective that is just hard to appreciate. You know, it was recently reported in the Financial Times that the 25-year-old Duke of Westminster will be inheriting $12 billion. 25-year-old Duke of Westminster.
And of course, you said $12 million?
No, $12
billion. Wow.
$12 billion. But what's fascinating about this article, though, is not simply that's fascinating enough, I suppose, but what's really interesting is to really be able to understand how the source and the longevity of this young man's wealth and how it accumulated all those years. Do you know this guy has had such an incredible royal lineage that dates back to 1677 and, you know, the Norman conquest?
Yes.
In fact, his family has owned over 366 acres of prime real estate in the heart of London, and they've owned it almost since 1677. Now, just take a minute and just think about that.
Wow.
Absolutely incredible. And this wealth has been passed down to family member to family member to family member.
Isn't that something?
It's absolutely amazing.
So you're talking about, and I want to make sure I get his name right.
Richard Lewis Grosvenor.
Grosvenor.
Who will be the next Duke of Westminster.
Well, you know, I was actually able to, I read that article as well, so I appreciate you sharing that with me, Nick. And there's several things that really stood out. First of all, it's about not just what you know, it's about who you know. So one of the statements that he made is, make sure, and this was, they spoke to a reporter, Gilbert, the late Gilbert Grosvenor, spoke to a reporter in 2004 and said he gave this advice to would-be entrepreneurs. Make sure they have an ancestor who was very close friends with William the Conqueror.
That's a powerful commentary.
So I thought that was interesting for a few reasons. One is, it's not always what you know. It's also who you know. I am a firm believer, too, that no matter what situation that you're in, God can change it overnight.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think about William the Conqueror. And for him, you know, William the Conqueror, which he ran England or in the 1000s until he passed away, he was an illegitimate son. So he wasn't all the way born into royalty by the mother and the father. He was actually born by his father, but also by his mistress. But because of who he was, because of his fortitude, because of him pushing forward, and him just really being knowing how to work the system, he was able to really run and rule England.
Well, it's an interesting point you make, because that quote that you just shared also typifies the number one way, you know, wealth is created in this country, and it's passed down.
Yep,
inherited.
That's it.
So that, if anything, when you think about, you know, how one becomes wealthy, well, if you're already wealthy, you know, you just pass it down. And that's this huge lineage here we see of wealth being passed down for generations. The other part is there's also some interesting story about how they had to do certain things in the last several hundred years to protect their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fascinating to see. At one point, they were going to sell some of the land in downtown London and decided not to. And we're talking about over 400 acres. That is amazing property.
Oh,
in fact, the American Embassy is on that property, as well as a few other landmark places.
Oh, it's down prime, prime.
From the Buckingham Palace.
It's the prime real estate in the world.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
exactly.
If you're going to own a few hundred acres, that's the one. Those are the ones you certainly want to own.
Right.
Worth billions of dollars. So.
So what can we, there's something else that I think is fascinating, too, in terms of the counsel that people around the young Duke are sharing with him. Which is that they want him to be a steady and stable, focused young man in order to, you can't squander $12 billion away. That's not going to happen. It's a larger culture, right, that supports,
that's right,
you know, this longevity of wealth. And while many people may not have lots of financial wealth, they have cultural values they share, hard work, not to live in excess, to be focused. These are sort of values that I think that are being sort of passed down. You see that even with the so-called royal family, you know, who just has wealth. And so they can, you know, they can act like fools if they want, and some have.
Yeah, that's right.
But then there are others who really look to a sense of duty. And in many ways, our wealth, without necessarily financial wealth, our wealth is our family, our name, our integrity. That's wealth, too, you can pass down.
That's right. That's right.
And how you manage your money is also a way of, you know, integrity.
Oh, no question. You follow the money, you'll find out who someone really is.
That's correct.
And what they're really about. This certainly definitely talks about those things. I just, you know, again, going back to William the Conqueror and having the right person at the right time shows the opportunity. But from 1066 to currently, how do you sustain that? It takes a level of focus. It takes a level of planning. And you may not be in that situation today. If you're listening to this conversation.
Yes.
But what do you do differently? One is having the same level of focus that they have, making sure that it's not just about you.
That's right.
You have to think about the future. So when children are born into wealthy families, typically the insurance policies are already written on them as babies.
That's right. That's
you
right.
write the second one again as soon as they become 18. So there, everything goes into the trust. And it's ready to go. So we talked about life insurance last week in pretty good detail. Life insurance was actually founded the same place where this guy was in actually 1706.
Isn't that something?
1706 by the Amicable Society for Perpetual Assurance is the name of the company that they started. Basically, a bunch of wealthy people coming together to make sure that they can sustain and keep this going. Insurance for traders and people who have owned ships and vessels have been going back since 1750 BC. However, this is the new life insurance, I guess most current, which was started in Europe in 1706. Also, the Equitable, which is a mutual carrier, started in 1762. That was the first mutual life insurance company. So, again, it was all started for wealthy people. It came over into the United States in the late 1760s. So it was 1768, 1769 that also started for life insurance to the wealthy. The reason why I keep talking about this all the time is because it's important to make a change, make a difference. And you do that by understanding what wealthy people have actually done. One of the first things they've done is say, you know what, we want to keep what we have, so we need to buy life insurance to make sure we do that. It's just so important. Do whatever. If someone else who's wealthy is, and they've been doing this for hundreds of years, if they're doing these things, why don't you look to do this as well? So one reason is, you know, you have to take yourself away. It costs money to buy life insurance. You can buy term very inexpensively, but ultimately you're going to have to buy a permanent policy because term goes away. Less than 1% of all term policies actually pay a death benefit to the beneficiary. Why? Most people outlive their terms. So if you buy a permanent policy, which could be whole life, index universal life, variable universal life, etc., then now you have a life that you're going to life insurance policy that you'll have your entire life. So you are certainly going to make sure in that area that something's going to be passed down. That's what they've done. They talked about it in this article. They talked about the tax ramifications.
That's true. He did.
Of having this. And they mentioned that this was no problem as well because life insurance was guaranteed to be involved. In the United States, for instance, I mentioned the word trust. If you have an estate of $5.465 million, then now you're subject to estate taxes. So let's say you have an estate and you have $3 million, but you also have a $3 million life insurance policy. Okay. Then you would definitely want to have what's called an ILIT, Irrevocable Life Insurance Trust.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because now that second $3 million is outside your estate.
Mm-hmm.
So now since your actual estate is still only at $3 million instead of $6 million, then you're not subject to estate taxes. So these are some of the things that you want to look at when you do your planning.
Yeah, that's good. That's a great point. When you think about, you know, Gerald Grusner, this gentleman, I just can't, the Duke that passed away at 64 years old. It's amazing how he even talked about being uncomfortable with his wealth.
But he didn't want to let it go.
No, he didn't want to let it go though. Yeah, he was clear about that. Yeah. You know, he's a little discomfort, but you know, let's not get it twisted. He was not ready to let any of the wealth go. But I think his point was that the idle rich who don't have much to do with their lives can be as insignificant as those who don't have money who are idle with their lives. That's probably one of the jewels, I guess, that the late Duke Gerald Grusner had shared in terms of how idle mind affects both the wealthy and those who are not.
You're right. And as we look at this place of inequality here, you can clearly see from this article that planning works.
Absolutely.
So starting with their forefather.
That's right.
Who made friends with William the Conqueror. That was a plan to say, I'm going to side over here all the way through to keep that wealth for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. So over a thousand years.
Yeah.
So that happens with a plan. So that's what we have to do here in the U.S. as well.
Mm-hmm.
We realize that the numbers are changing. Our wealth, people always assume the American dream that our kids are going to do better than us.
Right.
Well, the numbers show that that's not the case. So if that's not the case, who's the corporate? Who's the person that's actually causing the problem?
Mm-hmm.
You've got three people. We talked about this on the show many times. Your employer, you can blame them. Okay. Is that going to make any difference?
Not in the least.
You know, if you call Bank of America and say, hey, you're the problem, pay me more money, they're going to might kick you out the door.
That's right. Number
two is going to be the government. And then number three is yourself. So which person do you have the most control over? Hopefully the answer is going to be number three, yourself.
Right.
So we can put together a plan that will change it. And unfortunately, I don't know where you are in your life, but it may actually not change your life, but it may change the life of your children and your children's children. And you can directly affect that by doing some planning now.
So for our listening audience, we talk a lot about insurance and how important it is.
Yep.
In terms of not only, as a security network for your family, but an opportunity to transfer wealth to your family, which is a different kind of conversation mm-hmm. that we've been trying to have. So what would you say would be the most, I think, strategic way of looking at term insurance or, you know, whole life insurance? What would you tell a person in terms of trying to choose?
So first, you have a couple of phases in your life.
Mm-hmm.
One is that, well, three phases. One is that beginning phase. So now I'm graduating from college. I'm making probably the least amount of money that I'm going to make, hopefully, in my life. I may have some student loans, some debt. So I'm just getting started. I have no nest egg. So if you have, however, I mean, we'll take a step back. However, you are the youngest you're going to ever be. So just like anything else, mm-hmm. life insurance has a compounding effect. So if you buy life insurance while you're younger, it's going to be cheaper. So you buy life insurance when you're younger. So now you have the cost that's vastly reduced versus buying it older. So that's so you buy a term policy.
So you buy a term. If you're a young person, you'd buy what? 15, 30 year term insurance,
yep.
you're saying?
Yep. You would
rather
buy
than whole life or?
You would buy, I mean, everybody's situation is going to be different. But if you're just getting started, don't have much money, and you have an insurable need, which is basically I love somebody,
mm-hmm.
then you buy term insurance. You will typically buy a 20 year term. Sometimes you can buy a 30 year term. It depends on the price of it. Sometimes 30 year term can be a lot more expensive. So you may want to look at a 20 year. And when you buy it, you want to look at companies that are convertible to permanent policies, because once you go through underwriting, both financial and medically, mm-hmm. then if you buy the right policy, then you can convert it to a whole life or universal life without having to go through underwriting again. So that could be your first and last time ever having to go through that.
That would be very wise.
Yeah. Yeah. So for that beginning phase, that's definitely what you want. But now, as the assets grow, as you look at their other needs, of now the goal is to really build my wealth. Now I'm in that accumulation phase of my life. I'm starting to make more money. I'm going up the ranks. I become a manager mm-hmm. or a director and so forth. Typically, you see this, I would say, 35 to 50,
mm-hmm.
That accumulation phase. Where I'm looking to make as much money as possible and make the moves mm-hmm. I can. Then you start looking to convert that over to a permanent policy. Okay. Then 50 and above, then you definitely at this point, I'm looking at my retirement. I'm looking at my the future medical costs. I'm looking at tax issues because I've amassed some type of wealth, hopefully. Then you want to look at a permanent policy because term can become very expensive at that stage, or it probably doesn't make sense. Now it's about actually buying the house. So when you term, it's like you're renting. But permanent insurance is like buying the house. Now I want to make sure, just like I wanted to own my own home, now I want to make sure that I can actually buy this insurance policy. And you can buy insurance policies based on a short period of time. So you can buy a 5-year, a 10-year policy, and it could be paid up in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So how that's
about,
a good time to look
mortgage
at
insurance? I hear a lot of people are considering mortgage insurance.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, true mortgage insurance, it pays off the lender if you pass away.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do is buy a term policy for the term of your loan. And if you pass away, it goes to you. And then you can choose to pay off the house or not. Or whoever your beneficiary is, if
right.
it's your spouse, could choose to pay the house off or not. So typically, I would recommend to buy enough to pay down all your debts, which brings up a good point. How much do you buy?
That's my next question.
Yep. You want to buy, let's start in the accumulation phase again. So typically, if you have debts that you want to pay off, and if you have, you're married, you have young children, then now we have to replace your income. So you're thinking at least 5 to 7 times your income, plus paying off debts, plus college education. Though that's equals the amount. And then you want to buy life insurance in bands. So typically $200,000, $500,000, or a million, it tends to be less expensive per $1,000. So you typically buy in bands, $200,000, $500,000, or a million. You know, so you have more than enough there. So 10, I will round up versus down. So we've actually delivered some death claims before.
Really?
And I've never had anyone come and say, you've given me too much. It just this doesn't happen. So we want to make sure that you have, in this case, more than enough. And really, you buy life insurance first because you love somebody, but then you convert it to the right policy because you love yourself. Because all the benefits we talked about last week, retirement supplement, medical benefits that you can have, and using it as your own bank also. Something very powerful, uninterruption of compound interest. It's like what we mentioned last week. Very powerful ways of really building your wealth so you can enjoy it. And because you're doing it in the wrapper of life insurance, just like this article, now we are ensuring that we're going to pass something down. There are many people who thought, and I've talked to people who said, I'm going to pass this house down, you know, 10 to 15 years ago, and I'm going to leave a great amount of wealth to my family. Well, what happened in 2008, 2009? Those values have gone down in many areas and still haven't come back yet. For that reason, you know, real estate may or may not be there. Now, the stock market over time has proven itself. But if you die at the wrong time and the right. market is down and the family takes out the money at that time, that might not be much going to them. But if you have life insurance, it's going to them and it's going to go to them income tax free.
So this is interesting because I was reading an article recently. It's really not a very new article, actually, but it was in the blacknewjersey.com magazine. It was talking about life insurance and how African Americans tend to survey higher as those who have a favorable opinion and even purchase life insurance more than on average than Latinos or whites. And I thought that was fascinating because one of the reasons they said is because, you know, African Americans tend to be really conscious of wanting to, number one, pay for the burial, but also not wanting to leave something for their family, for their children. And I found that interesting because one would have thought the opposite might be true because we hear so many terrible indicators along the diversity continuum, really. But I thought that was good news in a sense that there is this sort of real interest.
That is because, you know, you hear the stories about not being able to bury a loved one. Just like the family we mentioned last week about the family in Atlanta who was trying to raise money to bury the patriarch of the family. And then they couldn't do that. So for that reason, they do. However, what I've also found by having over 3,000 interviews with prospective clients and clients, I've also found with African Americans, many of them have been sold the wrong types of policies. Life insurance is great, but you need to make sure you have actually a great policy. So what do you look for? One is AM Best rates life insurance companies all the way from AAA all the way down. So because if you're going to buy and want this type of protection in anything, whether it's auto insurance, life insurance, what have you, you want to make sure that the insurer has the ability to pay you when necessary. The last thing you want is someone to pass away and the insurance company is fighting you because they don't want to pay the death benefit.
Right.
So making sure that you have a highly rated A carrier or better, which will be considered investment grade carrier or better, would be certainly one of the things you want to look for. And also what I found is African Americans typically haven't bought enough insurance. So it's great that you have enough to bury you, maybe $10,000. You say, okay, I'm done. But it goes beyond that. If you look at this article, they're not looking at just burying somebody. They're looking at passing on generations of wealth. So even where they started, they were worth a couple million dollars when they started. Right. Now it's worth, in today's dollars, now it's worth billions in today's dollars. You don't get there by just doing enough. And with the numbers being what they are, African Americans being toward the bottom of their net worth, of our net worth, then we have to look at what changes do I make?
Right.
One of them is starting with this easy way of doing this adding money back to the family. You do that by buying the right life insurance company. There are many good ones out there, but you want to start with making sure you have one that's highly rated. And I'm not saying you spend all your money on life insurance. It goes in the course of a plan, but that is a part of the plan. One guaranteed, we're going to die.
Right.
So if we know we're going to die, why wouldn't we go ahead and put something in place to take care of them, to take care of the people that we love?
Well, you made the point that oftentimes African-Americans will buy the wrong policies, right?
Absolutely.
And so according to this article, it says that oftentimes the premiums for these policies were so high that if the policy was kept, the premiums exceeded, you know, the death benefit. I mean, my goodness. I mean, that's a terrible policy, isn't it?
Well, it happens all the time. One way of doing that is because it's a term policy. So let me get this term policy. It's cheap, but term is for a period of time. So you look at the illustration. It says 10-year, 20. Let's say it's a 20-year term. Well, why are you keeping this for 30 years? Because after year 20, when it's level, then it's going to start to go up to a point where it will become unaffordable. And so we definitely have to get away from that, because now you don't keep them. That's why, going back to the first stat, less than 1% of all term policies pay a death benefit, because they all become unaffordable.
That's right.
It doesn't make sense. So that's why planning is so important. Planning is so important. Whether you come in and you talk to a certified financial planner like myself or someone in our team at Worth Financial, or you just talk to someone who's done a good job with their money, who you know is financially astute. It could be an uncle who's just done everything the right way. Then it's important to make sure that you learn. You aren't taught this. I mean, no one's taught this stuff in school. So I was a finance major. No one taught me how to balance my checkbook. No one taught me how to take care of my family. So in this way in particular. Right. So it's important to make sure you do that. And it's important because our government, these entitlements are going to change. It's just going to happen. They're going to change. They've been going down for years. So Social Security is not the same like it was before. Before, you could retire at 65, get full Social Security. Now it's going to be 67. Right. And guess what? It's probably going to change again to 70 or 72. So if you retire earlier, you're going to and you elect for Social Security, that means you'll probably get a reduced benefit. Medicare, same changes. So you can't rely on the government. Your employers are now saying, we're getting away from pension plans and defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans. Why does that benefit them? That's less money they have to give to you. And also, now it's on you. They're no longer responsible to have to take care of you. So the only person you have is yourself. So good, proper planning is the key.
Yeah, well, in education, I think that's what we did today, educating our listening audience to the value and the dilemmas of getting the right policy.
Absolutely. That's absolutely the way to go. And something else just to mention is, how do I pass down wealth? We talked about this a little bit last week as well, is looking at taxes. Just like in this article, they've made sure that they could help avoid taxes. We have to do it too. One way of passing down wealth is having a Roth IRA. In traditional accounts like 401ks and traditional IRAs, then you have to pay once that person passes away. Let's say they leave however much money left to the beneficiary. And let's say it's a non-spouse beneficiary. Then at some point, they're going to have to pay taxes on that money.
Yes.
So now if you have $100,000 saved, you don't have $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
It may go to your child. And let's say your child is now paying 50% in taxes because tax rates have gone up 20 years from now. So now you've worked hard to save $100,000. Now they're only getting 50. But if they have a Roth IRA,
right,
then you converted that over to a Roth, or you made contributions to a Roth, then now that money grows tax deferred. And when it comes out, either to you or your beneficiary, it comes out income tax free. So you could amass $1 million or $2 million or $10 million. Doesn't matter. That comes income tax free to your beneficiaries. So that's another way outside of life insurance that you can look to make sure that what I have, what I've built, I can have a Roth. Some may say, well, I make too much money to actually make a contribution to a Roth. Well, you can convert your money into a Roth, which means at that year you have to pay the income tax for the conversion. But what you're doing is you're paying a little bit now to save a whole lot later if you plan properly.
Well, there you have it. That's some absolute news you can lose. Thank you so much, Glenn.
My pleasure.
All right, man. We'll see you next week.
See y'all.
This has been The Wirth Report with your host, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. To learn more about Wirth Financial and to speak to one of their advisors, call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or log on to worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com.